Stay tuned now for Edward R. Murrow with the news, presented by Hams. H-A-M-M-S. Hams. Yes, Hams, America's most refreshing beer, brings you America's favorite newscaster, Edward R. Murrow. Looks refreshing, tastes refreshing, is refreshing. Hams, America's most refreshing beer, from the land of the sky blue waters. Have a Hams when you want real refreshment. Ask for Hams wherever fine beer is sold. It's America's most refreshing beer. Hams. Now sitting in for Edward R. Murrow, Don Hollenbeck.
Good evening. Another relaxation in the wage freeze just announced. The board relaxed it to permit pay increases to millions of production workers. It allows merit raises and length of service pay increases previously prohibited by the general wage price freeze. However, it's emphasized this is an interim action designed to permit day-to-day pay adjustments. The government today appealed to the patriotism of the striking trainmen. A White House statement said the work stoppage is directly injuring our national security and that the American people can tolerate no other outcome than a return to work. Speaking for President Truman, Press Secretary Joseph Short said the switchmen cannot be justified in preventing the movement of food and fuel for our people and supplies for our soldiers. In more direct action, the government at a contempt hearing in Chicago today took steps to obtain the name of every switchman who took part in the December walkout in an effort to prove the work stoppage was a concerted action and not the result of sickness. All this as the creeping paralysis caused by the walkout continues to spread, with the walkout spreading the cold wave mostly unrelieved, and among the shipments for GIs in Korea, shipments lying immobile in Chicago, nearly 1.5 million special winter gloves. With or without gloves, the GIs in the Allied offensive gained little ground toward Seoul today, the smallest advance in the push, which is now 9 days along. It's been held back more by fog and bad ground than it was by Chinese and North Korean resistance. That French-American regimental combat team, which had been surrounded and outnumbered by Chinese, has been rescued. And along most of the front, the enemy seems to be pulling back from the Allied artillery and air attacks. The Army Surgeon General reports today there were 5,300 cases of frostbite among our troops in Korea through December, and that between 10 and 20% of the frostbite patients who had to be sent home had required varying degrees of amputation. And one more statistic from which students of the Times may draw some inference. The Army is having fewer psychoneurotic patients in Korea than it had in World War II. In Korea, the ratio is about one such case for every 7 wounded in battle. In World War II, it was 1 for every 5. A story gained circulation in Washington and around the world last night that a decision had been taken on high levels to stop the United Nations forces at the 38th parallel, if they managed to get there, and to establish a firm defensive line at that mythical boundary. The theory being this might help ease negotiations with the Beiping government, now branded an aggressor by the United Nations. There was no authority cited for that story. It was one of those high official, informed quarters things which are sometimes let out as trial balloons to test reactions. Well, there's been time today for some of those reactions, and they've all served to puncture this particular balloon with a dismal pop. Our reactions come from high official sources and informed quarters, too, and yet there is this difference. The high officials who deny the story profess to have no idea who the high officials are who let go the trial balloon. And it's emphasized in the strongest terms today there has been no decision one way or another about what to do when the 38th parallel is reached, if it is. And military authorities are quite understandably upset over the possible effect of such a story on the morale of the forces. As an 8th Army spokesman in Korea puts it, we have not yet gone to the business of divulging our intentions to the enemy. With news of a limited objective, a soldier might be inclined to think the war is just about over, might relax his efforts. And Pentagon officials point out that a guarantee that the 38th parallel would not be crossed might induce the communists to fix their defenses just above that line. Their armies intact and a continued menace. Military men realize that negotiations must be carried on off the battlefield, but they do wish that such negotiations would not involve the telegraphing of information or misinformation as to military intentions and strategy. Just how far apart the soldiers and the diplomats are on this one may be gathered from the fact that some of the very highest of the Pentagon people hadn't even heard of the reported parallel policy until they read about it in the morning newspapers. And it's not conducive to the best generalship to get your information that way. One final point, which the soldiers point out patiently. The 38th parallel in Korea does not provide the terrain for a good defense line going or coming, and they would like to be allowed to select their own subject to conditions prevailing at the moment. Whether they have read the papers in Beiping, we don't know, but at any rate, their radio today broadcast a statement that the struggle against UN troops would be intensified and that the United Nations decision on aggression was shameless and preposterous. Whatever the source or authenticity of that report about stopping at the 38th parallel, the idea has taken hold among some delegations at Lake Success, although the South Korean foreign minister says it would be a betrayal of thousands of UN soldiers and Korean civilians killed in the war. Again, we note the apparent irresponsibility of the report and the comments by some prominent diplomats to the effect that if such a plan had been agreed on or was being strongly considered, it would be folly to advertise it before it was completely nailed down on both sides of the line. General Eisenhower spent several hours today with the House and Senate Armed Services and Foreign Affairs Committee in closed session, and the gist of his testimony was to support drafting 18-year-olds and to urge the speedy dispatch of American fighting units to Western Europe's defense. One unit sent now, he said, will be worth two or three later because of the psychological effect, and he declined again to be pinned down as to the number of American troops which might be needed in Europe or the particular kinds he thought ought to be sent now. He did say that ours is to be the small fraction, not the great fraction, of the European army. He has estimated he could successfully defend Western Europe with a land force of 1,600,000 men. Members of the House Committee said the general spoke of America's contribution to this total as only a minor part, that the most important American contribution would be equipment, sea power, and air power. The general himself will be heard and seen on all radio and television networks at 10:45 Eastern Time tonight in his report to the nation. President Truman today asked Congress for $10 billion in new taxes at once, and he alerted Congress to be ready for still one more increase later this year. The president presented only the barest details of how he wants those taxes raised, 2/5 of the increase in individual income taxes, and details will be filled in by Secretary of the Treasury Snyder when the House Ways and Means Committee starts the hearings on Monday. The president did warn that small income taxpayers, as well as big ones, must shoulder the increase because the bulk of the personal income in this country is taken in by people making from $2,000 to $10,000 a year. Just about the president's only specific recommendation was that the present $600 exemption allowed the taxpayer and each dependent should be retained. As has been generally predicted, corporation taxes are expected to be increased about 8%, and increased levies will be put on liquor, tobacco, television sets, automobiles, and so on, other items which the president called less essential consumer goods. Last evening, we reported the third atomic test explosion in Nevada. We reported it as a mere footnote to the news of the day and suggested these things are becoming so routine as no longer even to be interesting as news items. With today's fourth explosion, we must rescue that story from the category of a footnote. This one this morning was the biggest of all. It shook nearby Las Vegas like an earthquake, shattered a big store window, brought a flood of alarmed inquiries, set off burglar alarms, and was visible 300 miles away in Los Angeles, where the United Press says the flash was so bright that a photographer made use of it to take a photograph showing the printing on billboards 300 feet from his camera. Well, the coincidence of the photographer being set up to take this picture at the moment of the supposedly secret detonation on the remote testing ground isn't explained. But from this and other evidence, it doesn't seem unreasonable to draw a conclusion that the Atomic Energy Commission might be touching off these bombs with an eye to all possible publicity, both so far as the Russians and our own people are concerned, even perhaps to the point of advising a photographer in Los Angeles to have his shutter cocked for the moment the celestial flash gun goes off. One other indication that we may be in the midst of a campaign to make us atom bomb conscious, the other day a Canadian scientist hinted that a snowfall in Ontario had brought with it radioactive particles from the Nevada explosions, and today that story takes on some trimmings. The New York office of the Atomic Energy Commission announces it's investigating reports that measurably radioactive snow has fallen at Rochester since the beginning of the Nevada tests, and the United Press says Governor Thomas E. Dewey has ordered an investigation by State Health Commission in order to find out what there is to the story. Radioactive snow is also reported at Cincinnati. The commission emphasizes that the Rochester reports indicate there is no harm to humans or animals in this radioactive snow, but certainly it does induce a shuddery feeling to realize that it's possible, in the ultimate perfection of radiation bombing, to sow a snowstorm with death more than 2,000 miles from the scene. With all the troubles that beset us and the prospect of more to come, there's perhaps an inevitable corollary. An Associated Press survey reports today there are indications of a phenomenal upsurge of interest in religion in the United States. The AP is careful to say that while the survey does not show that the nation is more devout, it does suggest that organized religion is commanding wider attention, and it cites some evidence. Seminaries are packed. Some of them, for the first time, are having to turn applicants away. Bible sales have nearly doubled in the last decade. Church building is at an all-time high. Colleges and universities have expanded their religious curricula to meet student demands. Church attendance and contributions are at a peak, and for the 20th century, materialistic note, industry and advertising men are backing a big nationwide religion promotion program. Here's the way one minister explains the revived interest in things spiritual. He says, people have discovered that the things they counted on the most are no longer dependable. The family structure is not what it was 20 years ago. The positive assurance of American vulnerability is gone. The value of money has fallen to pieces. To put it briefly, this minister says, things are shaking, and people are looking for something unshakable. The Senate Banking Committee, in a report to Congress today, accused the Reconstruction Finance Corporation of political favoritism, of mismanagement in the making of federal loans to the tune of many million dollars, and said the only drastic action can restore the RFC's integrity. The report went on to say that many Reconstruction Finance loan applications in the past 2 years had been approved by the board of directors without any apparent affirmative reasons, and sometimes despite persuasive reasons why loans should not be made. This has led Senator Fulbright, who's led the attack on the RFC, to demand a thorough shakeup of the organization from top to bottom. This is Don Hollenbeck. I'll be back in a moment with a footnote to the news.
Perhaps you're going to do a little entertaining this weekend. Have in some special guests. So right now, I'd like to check in and ask if you've made sure to put Ham's Beer on tomorrow's shopping list. There just isn't anything that can add to the enjoyment and festivities of a get-together like a golden glass of America's most refreshing beer, Ham's Beer, the beer that captures for you the crispness and life of the land it comes from, the land of the sky-blue waters. And when you fill your glass, just look at it, sparkling gold, like pale sunlight. Then taste it, crisp and light as a northern night, clean cut to the taste, with smoothness aged in. Yes, it looks refreshing, tastes refreshing, because it is refreshing. So tomorrow, be sure to get in that stock of Ham's. It's the beer with the letters H-A-M-M-S on the label. Ham's, refreshingly yours, from the land of the sky-blue waters. Now, here is Don Hollenbeck with his footnote to the news.
The Washington Post today points out that the groundhog, whose shadow we were supposed to have seen, is a parasitic phony who devours grain and vegetables that hard-working American farmers are subsidized for raising, that he's too lazy to look for his shadow, that he sleeps all day in his cozy den or in a swanky zoo while you and we are right out in the weather making and trying to scratch together one honest dollar for ourselves and another for the collector of internal revenue. And that's the footnote to the news.
Edward R. Murrow is presented each night, Monday through Friday, by the Ham Brewing Company of St. Paul, Minnesota. When you do your weekend shopping tomorrow, remember to order that supply of Ham's. Order this extra refreshing beer in the handy, easy-to-carry six-pack carton, or buy the case. Just ask for Ham's. It's America's most refreshing beer from the land of the sky-blue waters. Listen tomorrow on Monday. Larry Alexander speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.